A dozen.
There is nothing wrong with your computer. Do not attempt to adjust the sound. We are controlling transmission. For the next hour, sit back and we shall control all that you hear. There is nothing wrong with your computer system. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind and into Terror Chat. This is Terror Chat.
Your connection has been established.
Communication frequencies are now open. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Colin Knight.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, madam and messieurs. I am Colin Knight, the voice of the Canadian Rockies. We have got a great one-hour special for you tonight. John Hogue from HogueProphecy.com is going to be with us for the full hour to discuss a number of issues. Phone lines will be open, but first,
as we look at the world this evening, from Rome by Associated Press, Italian authorities say an earthquake has shaken the Alban Hills southeast of Rome. No injuries or damages have been reported at this time. Many people were awakened by the trembler, and parts of eastern Rome also reported feeling shockwaves. Italy's Civil Protection Department says the quake had a 3.8 magnitude. About 15 minutes after the quake, an aftershock shook the area of the epicenter near the wine-growing towns of Frascati and Marino. Campino, a town near the hills, which has also a small airport serving Rome, also reported feeling the quake. From Wellington, New Zealand, a strong earthquake hit near the remote Australian territory of Macquarie Island, but there were no immediate reports of injury or damage, the U.S. Geological Survey said. The Pacific Tsunami Warning Center website said no tsunami alert has been issued following the magnitude 7.1 quake. The U.S. Geological Survey, which monitors quakes around the world, reported the trembler hit at 11:30 a.m. Saturday and was centered beneath open ocean, 112 kilometers southwest of Macquarie Island, Australia's main sub-Antarctic territory. It was located 2,000 kilometers south of the New Zealand capital of Wellington. And from Baghdad by Reuters, U.S. and Iraqi forces killed 13 gunmen in clashes and airstrikes overnight in the Baghdad stronghold of cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, who said the United States would remain his enemy until the last drop of his blood. Authorities eased a blockade on Saturday in Sadr City district of eastern Baghdad that has trapped residents in the battle zone slum for 2 weeks. Gunfire was audible and some roads remained closed, but cars were allowed in and out of some entrances to the slum, home of 2 million Shiites, the power base of Sadr and his Mehdi army militia. Several hundred people have died in clashes between Sadr's followers and the U.S. and Iraqi forces since late March, when Shiites Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki launched a crackdown against the militia in the southern city of Basra. Sadr ordered his fighters off the streets on March the 30th, but the showdown has continued in Baghdad's stronghold, turning a Sadr city into a key front in the five-year-old war. The Baghdad and Basra fighting has thrust Iraq back into the center stage of the U.S. presidential election race. Residents describing the night's clashes as among the worst since the Iraqi forces launched an offensive into the area a week ago. A U.S. military statement said at least 13 gunmen were killed in one overnight battle. Reacting to the upsurge in violence, U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates appeared to reach out to Sadr on Friday, saying the cleric would not be treated as an enemy if he played a peaceful role in Iraqi politics. Sadr responded on Saturday by calling Gates a terrorist and accusing the United States of bombarding Iraqi cities. In Port-au-Prince from Reuters, the Haitian government and the private sector of the impoverished Caribbean country announced an emergency plan on Saturday to bring down the price of rice by about 15% in a bid to stop food riots. President René Préval, under the fire from critics for not doing enough about the soaring costs of living after more than a week of violent protests, said the price cut would be partly funded by the Haitian private sector and partly by money from international donors. Crowds of stone-throwing Haitians began battling UN peacekeepers and Haitian police in the south of the country on April the 2nd, enraged at the soaring cost of rice, beans, bread, cooking oil, and other staples. The unrest, in which at least five people died. .com. After the show, go to the homepage on blogtalkradio.com and have a look around. Look at the fabulous shows that are up on the lineup just for your entertainment. All of them are call-in shows, so make sure you have your Skype account handy. Remember, right after this show, we have the fabulous Olivia. Check it out in the fun section. Olivia brings the new meaning to humor. This is Terror Chat, thinking outside of the box.
And this is Terror Chat, thinking outside of the box, as we continue to make an attempt to contact Mr. John Hogue, our client for this evening. Fabulous man. I think you're going to enjoy him. And as we continue to check the bells and whistles through the fabulous sounds. The wonders of modern technology. So we have attempted to go with the Skype, and of course the Skype has decided to kick up a little bit of a fuss. So what we intend to do now is we intend to go to Plan 2, because I have learned many, many times in my life that Plan 2 is the only place to go. And when things just don't go right, then you have to move it on and contact another person. So what we are going to do is we are going to contact Mr. Hogue, and we are going to call him directly via another phone number, and then we're going to interconnect both numbers to Blog Talk Radio. Complicated process, but as usual, this is going to give me a little bit of trouble, so we will continue to attempt to get a hold of Mr. Ho. The joys of time zones and speed dials, sometimes they get busy, sometimes they get easy, but modern technology is wonderful. And I do not hear anything, so it does not appear that we have made connection with Mr. Hogue at this time, but we will.
Now I'm the king of the swingers, oh, the jungle VIP. I've reached the top and had to stop, and that's what's bothering me. I want to be a man cub, and stroll right into town, and be just like the other men. I'm tired of walking around. Oh, ooby-doo, I want to be like you. I want to walk like you, talk like you. You see it's true. An ape like me can learn to be human too.
And we have managed to find a landline that would accept Mr. Hogan. I believe Mr. Hogue is on the air as we speak. Good evening, Mr. Hogue. How are you this evening? Good evening, sir. Are you on the air?
Hear me?
There you go. Are you on the air, sir?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me now,
John? Colin? I can hear you, John. I apologize for this. You know, I have about as much technology that will come out of a book in about 4 hours, so I do apologize. But ladies and gentlemen, this is John Hogue. He's the author of 14 books with over 1 million in print in 17 languages. John is definitely a rogue scholar, a world authority on Nostradamus and the prophetic traditions of the world. John, it is my absolute pleasure to welcome you here tonight.
I'm glad to be on your show, Colin. There's so much to talk about. It's very busy.
Oh, my goodness. Where to start? I'll tell you, when I announced that you were coming to the show, Pal Talk political chat went nuts. I have had so many requests from chatters to ask the all-important question, John.
Yes.
How do you or Nostradamus see the 2008 presidential election?
Well, back in, I've been making presidential predictions since, well, this is my 40th anniversary, this presidential cycle, this 11th cycle that's coming up. And I have been 10-0 up till, since Richard Nixon all the way up to today. I have been feeling, sensing that we have a strange riddle developing in prophecy, at least for this person using prophecy, and that's that I see two presidents running in the same campaign. Now, this is sort of similar. This is sort of similar to what I a strange riddle that I had in the year 2000 when I was on show saying, you know, I absolutely am sure that Al Gore will win the U.S. presidential election by half a million votes. But I'm also totally sensing a very strange feeling that as much as I'll be completely right, I'm going to be completely wrong this time. And how can I be both? And of course, what happened is he did win the popular vote, and there was a dispute in Florida with the recount, which has later, as the time goes by, shows more and more that he actually did win Florida. Not actually from some conspiracy from the Republican side, as I originally believed, but more from the bungling of the Democratic precincts themselves, who created a butterfly ballot that had people confused in one county. About 6,607 people double voted for Pat Buchanan and Al Gore, thinking they were doing Al Gore, and that would have been more than enough, to, no matter who disputes what, with the 300 vote difference that finally was calculated, that would have seen the Al Gore win his presidency.
Right.
Now here we are 8 years later, and I have this very strange thing coming up where as far back as 1998, I saw Hillary Clinton as the next president in 2008. At the same time, a few years later, in 2006, when I saw a certain young senator visiting his ancestral homes in Kenya, I had this very strange premonition that he also was going to be president of the United States. Now, people who have read my free prophecy bulletin, which I release about once a week, called Hogue Prophecy.
I'm a subscriber. I'm a card-carrying subscriber. Okay. I'll tell you that.
Well, as you know, I've been as far back as over a year ago. I wrote about the Obama nation. You know what would happen if America might pick Obama. I also wrote an article about Hillary Clinton's albatross, which if
the
there
Obama
was one
dog.
Thing that could. Yeah. So that's the newest one that's just caused quite a stir. That's the newest and. Finally, I give a break to all those friends who read my bulletins who think that I've been too hard on the right for the last 8 years. Now everybody on the left who's had a nice vacation with me since it looks like whoever the president is going to be, it's going to be a left of center presidency coming for the next 4 to 8 years. Now they're going to get a chance to suffer what the poor right of center folks on my list have endured for the last 8 years.
Well, noticed with your prophecies, you've been fairly balanced, a little bit, you know, maybe a little bit nudged over, but coming from a background of Nostradamus, Nostradamus was probably the enigma of prophecies.
Yes, he worked very hard at it by writing what has to be the most profoundly dyslexic set of prophecies ever written, and from what I can gather from his rather overblown and turgid sentences with clauses that are half pages long, that he did it consciously to obscure, not so much to protect himself and his reputation from good people, but to protect himself and the future from bad people, who did over the centuries, some people like Hitler and Goebbels and others, tried to see some conclusion to their machinations in the future by reading Nostradamus. Right. If they had read him more clearly, he might have, for instance, if Saddam Hussein had been more clearly pronounced in his prophecies, he might have postponed his attack on Kuwait until he was a nuclear power.
True.
And it would have been a much worse situation.
Do you think that Nostradamus possibly also masked his quatrains because of the time of his life? He was under a great deal of scrutiny by those that wanted to profess him as a witch and a warlock and all kinds of nasty things.
Yes, that was part of it, and even some of his writings have a certain strategy in them that was like saying all the proper politically correct things that a person who might study forbidden books might say. For instance, his famous story about how it's in the preface to his History of the Future, his prophecy, that he's confiding to his then infant son for his posterity this letter, and he's saying that, you know, I've looked at these books and they're very bad, and when I burn them in my cauldron, basically, in his in his office, in his upstairs floor of his house, and it created this unholy bright light all through the house. Now, whether that was true or whether just the old parchments and books that he had very interesting ink and glues,
some
that
chemical
caused bright flames, or whether he simply was trying to shine it on to the church authorities to kind of show himself as a, you know, it's kind of the existential argument where you don't say, no, I've never done it. You say, yes, I did, and I'm so glad I burnt those books because they're evil, and it all is a ruse. You know, he committed them to memory, and these are the Jewish scriptures and others that are used in his
because of his Jewish background from his grandfather's side and through his lineage, using the Jewish mantra in some areas. I noticed a great deal of coincidence at times. He comes very, very close to a religion and then tends to just veer off a little bit.
It's always, you know, he's always being a bit tricky for reasons, practical reasons, of course, of protecting himself. You know, the strange thing is, and I wrote about it in my biography that I produced in 2003, Nostradamus, The Life and Myth, which you can probably get copies now on HogueProphecy.com, easier than anywhere else, but it's I tried to blend the factual Nostradamus into the mythological because you cannot separate the two. And it's one of the reasons why there hasn't been a large-scale biography done on him in a long time. And in that, you can find an interesting story about how accurate he was in his own day. First, you know, with time, people just railroaded him off as a quack. And then as he started actually hitting on major things, even a lot of things that we have not even heard from the popular culture and the History Channel and others, but, you know, certain things he wrote in a pamphlet where he clearly not only described in the first volume of the Centuries, the death of the king by a jousting accident, but he later, a year and a half before it happened, that was several years before, a year and a half before it happened, he wrote a pamphlet on the astrology of the time and basically predicted it.
Good luck.
And they looked at it as a triggering point for a civil war between Protestants and Catholics, which was his greatest immediate concern.
I could
and
see that.
So what happened then is it shifted around to where he became a persecuted for being correct rather than being just some guy who spouted off prophecies. And I must say from my own experience that I'm not only a scholar, but I think a scholar in this sort of subjective science has to also be a participant to understand the mystery of it. I have noticed since 1999 into 2000 that I've had quite a run of great accuracy in a lot of what I've said in the last 8 years, and I have definitely run into a lot more trouble for it than when I was on again, off again in the 90s.
Exactly. Well, when I looked at your website, John, as doing some background and research, some of the stuff you talked about in 2003 and 2004 are hitting so close to home that, you know, as George Norrie would say, you know, that's a direct hit. I mean, you know, you talked about the famine. You said that food that would be so plentiful would be taken away. And now we hear today that they're having this rice panic in Haiti, and it's become more expensive than gold. And these people are starving to death. I mean, it's fascinating. It just fascinates me.
And now, just before your show, I only looked up to notice the time to prepare the show because I was engrossed in what is immediately happening. As everybody in this country, in America at least, are fixating on what's going on between Obama and Clinton, there are steps that are being taken that are clearly showing that we are under the imminent threat of war, that Iran is about to be attacked by the United States. And I was just composing a Hoag Prophecy Bulletin to prepare for this eventuality, which I might have to advance ahead of schedule from the ones I already put out. because
things are moving very quickly.
Yes, and it all stems from something that that I've been writing about for a year now, a series about the Mars in Cancer phenomenon. It's an astrological phenomenon that it seems in modern U.S. history, whenever a U.S. president does something really stupid militarily and rash and unthought out, is faced with an unexpected crisis that is the sum total of missteps. That this has always happened during a Mars and Cancer transit, which means when Mars is moving through the natal, near the natal position of the sun of the U.S. country, which was born with the sun 13 degrees Cancer. So as it gets close and goes right over that, you can just see it like clockwork. You get the Bay of Pigs in 1961, you get the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, you get the Gulf of Tonkin incident that started the Vietnam War.
Right, I remember. Could this be the positioning that we are in the universe? There's been a great deal of talk about where we will be in our universe at 2012. That we will be in an area that we haven't been in, I believe it's 50,000 years.
Well, the thing is, 2012, we've got a long way of future history to get through and survive before we even look at 2012.
Really?
One thing that is right before us, I mean, within weeks or months, is this, to get back to this Mars and Cancer issue, is that we are now in the last transit of Mars in Cancer that started on March 3rd and is ending on March 5th and ending on May 9th. Now, back in last year, I said in my bulletins looking at this that if this U.S. president, who happens to be born with exact same sun and 13 degrees in Cancer as the United States, it's incredibly karmic. If ever there was a sign of the ugly American as president, this is it. And I said that in this time that Bush, if he ever was to follow his Sun-Neptune square, which is the
right.
sign of a man who thinks he's talking to God and he's only talking to his subconscious. It's the religious delusion par excellence sign. If he ever was going to do something really rash in the world, this is his last chance, and it's happening right now through early May, and there are all kinds of signs that we're about to see some kind of military strike, at least on the Al-Quds military bases in and around Iran.
Well, I did see that there were reports of explosions in Iran this morning, but not much news as to what had caused it. Apparently there is some casualties, but who caused it, what caused it, we're not quite sure right now. Do you think this has anything to do with China's push on the world?
Well, China's involved, certainly. China is a major client for Iranian oil. So there is, I foresee a time where China will have military assets in the Middle East. What we're really seeing here is something I talked about years ago, that the Iraq and the invasion of Iraq is just part of what I call the oil wars. I talked about these oil wars that would come from a potential Bush administration as far back as September 2000. Before there was a Bush administration, and a solid few years and few months before there was a war, which I also predicted in November of 2000 that if Bush were president, he would have the America in a war in Iraq halfway through his first term.
Do you think it was going to happen regardless, and that Bush is part of the universal code? As just another lever in a big machine?
Well, there are certainly forces that are trying in the next 36 years to find a global model for what has worked for national models of dominating the world, certain elites. You know, I find it not at all surprising that the first major figure in the Democratic Party that would endorse Barack Obama was probably the highest known member of the Skull and Bones organization. That is Senator Kerry, who, as a Bonesman, went toe-to-toe in 2004 with another Skull and Bonesman, George W. Bush. This elite group which has fashioned much of the ruling elite in America. It really doesn't matter what mask called donkeycrat or dumbopublican you want to put on it. It's almost like the A team and the B team play with dominating the scene as a shadow governing behind the actual government. And there is an attempt of a number of groups to find a way to run the whole world in the same way. And I must stress that it's very easy and rather simplistic when people want to believe that there's some, these groups, the Illuminati,
right,
or whatever you like to call them, are so well organized and so slick and got it so together that we're all just puppets and pawns in their hands. No, it's as chaotic in their world of attempting, and there's as much fights going on back and forth as in day-to-day life and normal life.
It's just a larger society in a different form of their business, every day-to-day life. I fully understand that. John, if you could just bear with me, I'm at the bottom of the hour. I'm getting all kinds of flags, and I just want to welcome some people on board. So if you'll hang in there with me, sir, and we'll be right back.
We all have busy lives, and in such, we can't always be at a computer at a set time and date to listen to our favorite Blog Talk Radio show. So Blog Talk Radio has developed a method where you can listen to your favorite show right from your armchair or your desk. You could even listen archive or live. So how do you do it? Well, it's pretty easy. Come to www.blogtalkradio.com. Choose your favorite show. Hopefully it's Terror Chat. Enter the specific station page and sign up for RSS feed or add the various players to your website or blog. Or put the player right on your desktop. It's as easy as that. Once you have the player, your favorite show is just a click away. Enjoy. Hey, this is Colin Knight. Glad you could make it here tonight, but remember, there's lots of other great shows on blogtalkradio.com. After the show, go to the homepage on blogtalkradio.com and have a look around. Look at the fabulous shows that are up on the lineup just for your entertainment. All of them are call-in shows, so make sure you have your Skype account handy. This is Terror Chat, thinking outside of the box.
All information provided in the Terror Chat radio program is the opinion of the speaker and not necessarily the opinion of the owner or its agents. Although Terror Chat takes all precautions to provide quality information, Terror Chat assumes no responsibility or liability for the legitimacy of information provided by guests' opinions or statements.
And with that, we are back with John Hogue from HogueProphecy.com. John, we've been talking about the presidential elections, and we've touched a little bit on China and Iran. We've looked at, you know, the future trends, where we're heading. What is your gut instinct? Can you give me a picture of the next 4 years?
The next 4 years are going to see a Bush right repeated as Bush left. It does appear that the trend is changing in U.S. politics, and that we may see a ticket that will have Obama at the top of the ticket with Clinton as the vice president. Although I had originally saw it as the other way around, there's a power struggle between what is a renegade group or dynasty, that is the Clintons, dealing with the eastern elite of the East Coast United States, or what we affectionately call over here the Boston Brahmins of the Democratic Party.
Is this just an American issue, or is it worldwide?
Well, it will become worldwide because of the power of the American president to influence world events. And what certainly is another aspect involved in this is that we're basically with the year 2008, and this is what I've said in my newest digital book, Predictions for 2008. It was such an important year that I didn't do it as a bulletin. There was so much to talk about that I wrote it as an entire book.
Right.
This is a pivotal year where we're going to look back at this year and say, this is when things started shifting into a whole new direction. We're seeing the dollar collapsing. We're seeing at the very least, the dollar will never return to its preeminent position as the sole world currency. That era is over this year. We will have multiple currencies. The U.S. dollar is now becoming what the pound sterling became in the early 20th century at the rise of the U.S. dollar.
As it finds its slot in the world market. Basically.
Right.
It's devaluing so that it can compete.
Yes. And that is what's going to happen. Those people who fear that China is going to demand from the U.S. that it pays back its debts should not fear, because that would collapse the U.S. economy, and that would, the day after, collapse the Chinese economy that depends so much on our business. So the thing to look for is an attempt by economics to find a new illusion to get a majority of people to believe in so that it will work. I mean, it's sort of like what happened with the Italian lira. At one point, they finally just shrug their shoulders and say, let's lob off a few zeros. And there it was. The lira was devalued, and it was, and they survived it. Much of economy is based on getting enough people to believe something has value.
Well, I promise to pay the bearer upon demand. I mean, it really is a nothing, isn't it? It's just a promise of the honesty of the person you're doing business with.
The only currency is in the promise, and what the economies of the world are desperately trying to solve right now is to find a new illusion that everybody can agree to. Now, I've always said that the thing that will bring down the world economies and America's economy is not going to be from the machinations of its illusions. It's going to be from the climate changing and from global stresses, global climate change, super hurricanes, earthquakes, and natural disasters, and also the ultimate natural disaster, which is a human population explosion, though has the curve of growth has flattened. There are now enough people on the earth to create a new billion people to feed and clothe and have consumer products for, and that is going to happen now for every 11 years.
I think it would be safe
we
to say that
this is the 2008 is the year where the insustainability of many things, the political, religious, social, and economic, are going to be glaringly, well, rubbed our nose into.
We've hit saturation point.
Yeah, we've reached it with 2008.
I believe that. You see, on every corner of the globe, something is not quite right. And they talk about global warming and the climate change, but this, in my eyes, is Mother Earth in a cyclical cycle, and we just better hold on and ride it out.
Well, and also the human race has decided, I wrote this far back as 1994 about this, that we have these huge brains, but we, through our you know, one of the main things that makes prophecy work is conditioning. It's a theory I have that every new generation is formatted by the previous to and seeded to repeat the past and call it the future. And that has worked for us as a civilization up to this point, because up to this point we have not become a global critical mass of a global society with finite resources. So
I can get onto that program, definitely.
So we are now in a situation where we are going to see collapses that you see with the lemmings or other rodent populations. When we don't have to do and follow the other way of looking at it, it's the destiny of the bark beetle, the California bark beetle. We just keep eating and eating and eating all the trees you can, and then nature will take its course. We call it God's will, but it's really, it can also be nature just lights one of the tender, dry, dead trees, starts a forest fire, and all the bark beetles are culled out of the system.
Right.
We're doing the same thing. Here we are with these huge brains, the most intelligent animals on the planet, and we are basically deciding to surrender our brain, put it on the shelf, and eat and feast and die like rats.
And pick up big sticks and beat each other until you do my will.
Yeah, and the thing is that which is also another throwback to animal territorialism, which has nothing to do with humanity. I mean, a lot of the things that we assume through the borrowed knowledge and programming of one generation to another that we assume to be human virtues are really not. And I think the more important issue that I've come to evolve towards in my 30-plus year study of prophecy and history, future and past, is that we have a syndrome that needs to be broken if we are to survive the coming century as a civilization.
Right.
And that syndrome is that is an issue of education. We have to stop training every new generation to be as stupid as we have been.
We need to think outside of the box, John.
In fact, the truth is, as some mystics like Osho and Krishnamurti and others and Gurdjieff have said, is we are born intelligent. It is a 20-year minimum process to turn us into functional mediocrities, divided against ourselves.
The dumbing down of society.
And this is the thing that has to be understood, that in short, our training as children to adults is to think that this consciousness is is not a driver of the car called our body mind through the road of life, but that we, the driver and the car are one.
Right.
But they're not. You know, we are told we're our car. And, you know, if you were saying, if somebody came to you and said, you know, you're not a human being, you're just part of your car, you'd think he was crazy. Well,
exactly.
that's what our training, our religions, our societies, and as they stand now, have done to us. They've made us identify with the tools of life and forget the consciousness that holds them. It's a simple atomic issue like that.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. It's a cycle of life and there are universal codes out there that we obviously have no consciousness of, really. We think we are intelligent, but, you know, we look at ourselves in realistic terms, and we are still coming out of the Stone Age. And if there are extraterrestrials out there, if there are other life forms out there, there's no wonder they don't want to make contact yet, because we haven't got it yet. We have not got the reality of what Mother Earth has given us, I don't believe.
Well, that is what is important about 2008 that actually makes it, in my mind, even more important than 2012.
Must be the Aquarius in me.
It's because we are literally, well, if you speak of Aquarius, we are actually at the exact halfway point from the overlap between two cosmic ages.
Mm-hmm.
What's called in the great cosmic calendar that was first fashioned in the ancient Mesopotamian regions is where it takes the position of the vernal equinox changes every year to a slightly westward position. And if you calculate that through an entire turn around the tropical constellations of the zodiac, it takes roughly nearly 26,000 years to accomplish, which means that each month, which is a constellation, is about 2,160 years. So we've just passed the halfway point between the Piscean month, or age, going into the Aquarian month, or age. We pass it right now.
Well,
actually,
you mentioned
the vernal equinox, just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier where there would be upheavals and change and the devaluation of the dollar and all of that, and I do agree with you. But I must say, as an Aquarius, I've never had it so good. This year has been so far so phenomenal that I have to question that there's not some kind of a process at work, because it is amazing. And I listen to the cataclysmic events, and it's like, well, I'm doing very, very well.
Well, you know, Aquarius rules chaos, and out of chaos.
Oh, that's my life.
And so, the Aquarian age is a time of greater spontaneity. It's going to be a time where the era of the great faith-based religions of the Piscean age will fade and be replaced by religions that are more scientific. And I mean scientific in the nature of the root of that word, which means to know. Rather than to believe, the next 2,000 years is about knowing, experiencing. It's not about subjectivity, but it's about existential knowledge from direct experience of the mystery. Or at least, if there is no faith, there is an embracing of the unknowable. And a willingness to become intimate with the unknowable. And therefore, things that might survive in a new form in the new 2,000-year period of religion may be things like what I would call now the science of self-observation, which used to be called dhyana or jhana or zen in ancient Eastern traditions, which means meditation. And meditation is not a religion or a faith. It's a technique to become more sensitive, alert, aware, And that, I think, is a key element in what's going to break our syndrome of repeating the past unto the future and its end for the human race, is that we will be forced to face our fossilized ideas of the past, see that they have betrayed us in the present, and transcend them and redefine the human race.
My goodness, you're hitting it all on the mark, John, and you're sending shivers down my spine. We've got to take one quick break here, and then we'll head for the top of the hour. Just stay with me, please.
Hey, this is Colin Knight. Glad you could make it here tonight, but remember, there's lots of other great shows on blogtalkradio.com. After the show, go to the homepage on blogtalkradio.com and have a look around. Look at the fabulous shows that are up on the lineup just for your entertainment. All of them are call-in shows, so make sure you have your Skype account handy. Remember, right after this show, we have the fabulous Olivia. Check it out in the fun section. Olivia brings the new meaning to humor. This is Terror Chat, thinking outside of the box.
And as we curve through into the final 15 minutes, I have with me John Hoag from HoagProphecy.com, probably one of the most accurate predictors that I've ever listened to. And I tell you, John, I listen to you every time you are on Coast to Coast AM with George and Uri in the wee hours of the morning while I may be in some strange place in Alberta. And it's my lifeline to reality. So I do thank you for that and for millions of listeners who also listen to you. And you make a great deal of sense. And it's hard to believe that we have popped through 45 minutes of chat. But I could talk to you for days, sir. Where do you see the economy of the Americas going? The blue-collar workers especially, those people that have been hit exceptionally hard.
The blue-collar worker in America has to surrender to the reality that a lot of the jobs that are leaving America are never coming back. So rather than try to fight to get them back, what is needed now is the people who will succeed in the future are those who realize they have to redefine themselves and recreate industries in America. And it's one thing that America has always been very good at so far. And it's really a testimony to its greatness as a people. The American people have always been able to redefine themselves. And here is one of those critical points in their history. First time, actually, that I've encountered this in American history, in half a century of it which I've lived in, is the people are not clear which way they want to go in redefining themselves. And it may very well be that this reticence is similar to the way the Americans felt back in 1938 and 39, when the world was facing its last major global crisis that could be in any way comparable to what's coming. Although what's coming for us, it will make World War II look pale in comparison because it's a global issue dealing with our very existence on this planet and how we use it and how we deal with each other. And it is a time for blue-collar workers to become green-collar workers in America. It is, I'm feeling that if it's a Clinton or an Obama presidency, I'm not sensing a very good sensing people that are really at the level of greatness to lead the American people. I think we're going to see a period of 4 years of chaos and moving back and forth, and it may have to be in the next presidential cycle. Strangely enough, I've been saying that Barack Obama's destiny is being pushed too soon. And hopefully I am wrong, but I'm believing that if he had been vice president and become president in 4 to 8 years, he had the potential, looking at his chart, to be a great leader.
And he would have the gravitas.
But now he's almost reminds me of, they call him the Black Kennedy. In fact, I predicted that they would call him the Black Kennedy early on, and that he would be endorsed by them. He reminds me of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy if he had been forced his destiny and become president in 1956.
Mm-hmm.
He would not have been the president that he became in 1960.
Right.
And what I've learned of studying prophecy and future timelines is that they are fluid and dynamic. They echo the living actions of the living eternity of present time. And so nothing is written in stone. It only appears sometimes that certain things are inevitable because of the level in which we've been programmed to be mechanical and inevitable in our actions, collectively and individually.
And as you wrote about the Obama God, I mean, it was a phenomenon that I don't think any politician saw coming.
It is a remarkable. In fact, I haven't seen it since the last the history cycle, that last time we were in a feminine history cycle. That is a cosmic night cycle. There's 36 year cycles that go on in the cosmic calendar, and one kind of leans more towards yang or male related history, and then one is more subjective, emotive history. And we have just passed from 1972 to 2008 from a cosmic day cycle to the cosmic night cycle, where now emotion is a little more, leaders and artists and thinkers and visionaries can appeal more to people if they appeal to their emotions more than their reason.
Right.
And
right.
The last great seducer, the last great Obamagog, if you will, somebody who could seduce a nation to follow his lead, was the Chancellor of Germany in 1936, when the last cosmic night cycle began. Now, as I said in my bulletin, and I say again on your show, as certain people are bouncing off the walls right now, that I am not calling Barack Obama Adolf Hitler. I am saying that Barack Obama, pulled apart from Adolf Hitler, has the same power that we have not seen since Adolf Hitler to seduce a nation. What he does with his seduced nation, I hope, will be something equal to Abraham Lincoln, not Adolf Hitler.
Right.
But
right.
I do not see
the unknown quantity, and that is an unknown quantity. It has two roads to the same destiny.
And he's endorsed by the Skull and Bones organization. Because the first person that endorsed him is the chief liberal wing of the Skull and Bonesmen who endorsed him. He is endorsed by the power family elite of the Kennedys.
They have made the decision that they have found him.
The amount of money that is flooding into his campaign is very cleverly being flooded through larger business groups, not individuals. They've found a way around doing it, and that is going to, I predict, be exposed. In the coming election, national election. It's a very slickly run thing, and I'm feeling that the power elite is seeking a new George W. Bush to be their puppet. And I know that sounds hard to people who look at the charm and charisma of Barack Obama. I'm not even sure that he's even aware of the manipulation that's going on.
I have argued
like
that fact quite some time.
Well, the Kennedys, Robert and John, also had a similar issue with their father, got them into power by using Hoffa and Mayor Daley and their mafia connections and the Kennedy connections to get them in power. And then once in power, Jack and Bobby rebelled against that power elite, the underworld, and look what happened to them.
Yeah.
Cautionary tale for the next Kennedy. Cautionary tale. Be mindful of Barack Obama.
Oh yeah, I'm not a proponent or a true believer in the Bilderberg and the Carlyle Group and the Skull and Bone Society, but at the same time, I do honor the fact that big business, and we're talking big business, these people play the world like a chess game, and we're all pawns, we're all players, even though we think we have our own course of action, our course of lives, we are given a destiny, whether it's man that has given us that destiny or whether there is a manifest destiny.
Consciousness is um, in in humanity, you could say that natural unconscious evolution for the last 4 billion years is a collective phenomenon. But
yeah.
It would also be true that what we're about to see is the birth of a new era, perhaps around 2012, that the beginning, and it will not manifest for long after that, but it begins, it is seeded at that time, where you see a new form of evolution on this planet, which is individual and conscious.
Do you see anything regarding extraterrestrial or space travel at all?
Well, Nostradamus is one of the great prophets who seem to indicate that humanity would survive beyond this world when it's destroyed in the year 3797 by a final conflagration of the sun. He describes he talks about how the races of man would endure, and for a period of time they would be in Aquarius, and for a time immemorial and in perpetuity they would be in Cancer. The way he described it is like a place, not an astrological sign. The only place I can derive from that, if the Earth is destroyed, is the stars around Aquarius and Cancer. There must be Earth
life. There must be Earth-born life, yes. Yeah.
And that the human race, so it is even Nostradamus who, in his, who's talking nearly 1,800 years into our future, is talking about a galactic civilization. So, in part, your question is answered that we will get there. Now, the other thing I would like to add to that is a feeling I've had for a while now, is that if there is extraterrestrial life waiting for us to grow up, they're not going to say, hello, here we are. They're going to wait for us to get to a point where we discover them. And the way that we might discover them is might be rather mundane and surprising. It could very well be that in the middle of the next decade, when we have telescopes sensitive enough to capture artificial light coming from worlds nearby us, 20 or 30 light years away, from cities
right.
on worlds near us. It'll be something as simple as that will bring this world, as Arthur C. Clarke predicted, together in just one night, when we suddenly realize, probably for our baser motivations, that we are not alone and therefore we better get our own stuff together because we have to be united against an unknown universe.
Right. God bless Arthur C. Clarke. You know, you don't realize the value and the power of a person until they have gone. And that's so unfortunate. There are so many good people out there, yourself included. We spoke briefly about your mentor. And the honor that we can give them is to move forward and to understand what they are trying to teach us. And we are into the 1 minute mark, John, so I will leave the final minute open for you, sir, and have you give us your final minute idea.
Well, I would just simply say to all the people who haven't heard me before and people who have, to please come and visit my website, hogeprophecy.com. It's hogeprophecy.com. And to also join my Hogue Prophecy Bulletin and look at some of the digital books that I have available, as well as some of my print books. And, you know, it's a merging of current events with future prophecy is the specialty of that website.
It is fabulous. It is absolutely fabulous. It truly is. I was there all week, and I'm fascinated. John, it's been an absolute pleasure, sir. I do appreciate you taking the time to humble me on the air, because this hour seems like 5 minutes. So thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thank you for having me on, Colin. Thank you all for listening.
And God bless you, John. May you take care of yourself, and hopefully we will have you back again, and we will be able to chat and talk to our dear friends, and be able to get more of the prophecies, because it is astounding. We're into the final 20 seconds of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, it has been a pleasure. And boy, yeah? Wow. John Hogue, Hogue Prophecies.
Hey, this is Colin Knight. Glad you could make it here tonight, but remember, there's lots of other great shows on blogtalkradio.com. After the show, go to
Blog Talk Radio.